Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
From the hills of Austria.
Oh, they make contact. Verstappen and Norris, the leading contenders for the World Championship, come together chasing the lead.
Incredible.
Under the lights of Las Vegas.
It is showtime. Our Saturday night fight is five lights away.
Amongst the cherry blossom in Japan.
And a brilliant race for Michael Schumacher to win the 2000 Japanese Grand Prix and the World Championship.
On the shore of the Red Sea in Saudi Arabia.
Max, so let's get the position back to Hamilton. Do that strategically.
Oh, they touched and they collided. Max Verstappen and Lewis Hamilton. Just what is going on here in Jeddah tonight?
And all across the globe.
A Formula One season is a world tour. 24 spectacular races in 21 incredible countries.
We begin down under. We wind our way through Asia and the Middle East to the European parts of the season onwards to Canada, back to Europe again before finishing in America and Brazil and Abu Dhabi.
How is it all planned? Why does F1 race where it does? And where is it going next?
Welcome to F1 Explains, the F1 calendar. Hello and welcome. This is the official F1 podcast, which answers your questions about the globe-trotting sport that is Formula One. I'm Katie Osborne here in the U.S., home to three F1 Grand Prix, including Miami and Las Vegas, the two newest additions to the F1 calendar.
And I'm Christian Hugill in the UK, only a couple of hours from Silverstone, which was the very first track to host a Formula One World Championship Grand Prix in 1950.
And Christian, let's be real. A lot has changed since then. The first season only had seven races. All but one of them were in Europe. Back then, the Indy 500 was a round of the F1 World Championship. So the U.S. was on the very first F1 calendar.
Yes, yeah, Silverstone, Monza in Italy, Spa in Belgium, and Monaco were as well. And they're still here with us 75 years later. But over the decades, some races have come and gone. Others have become long-standing favourites and the number of races has gradually increased.
And as of the 2024 season, F1 has raced in, get this, 34 countries at 77 different circuits. That's incredible. And more nations and racetracks want to join the party in the future.
Of course they do. We have had loads of questions about how F1 races are scheduled, why they're held in the order that they are, and how new races get added to the F1 calendar. So we have decided to get all the answers from the person in charge of it all. We've gone to the top, Katie.
That's what we do here in F1 Explains. Louise Young is F1's Director of Race Promotion. She and her team have to plan F1's annual world tour. My goodness, what an undertaking. It was so fascinating to talk to her about the massive, complicated, and very important job.
Louise, welcome to F1 Explains. Thank you for joining us on a busy race weekend. Lovely to have you with us.
Yeah, you're very welcome, Christian. Nice to be here.
Lovely to see you. Let's start off by explaining how a Formula One race gets on the calendar.
Okay, no small question to start with.
We like to throw you in at the deep end, Louise.
Okay, so you need a happy union. I think that's the major overriding theme,
like
is a happy
marriage.
Union.
A happy
that's
union.
Right, that's right. So we have interest from destinations all around the world who would love to join us on our calendar. And it's obviously a select group who make it there. So someone who owns or has access to a track, that's a really key component.
Really helps, doesn't it?
It
a motor racing circuit,
it does.
Massive advantage.
That's right.
Big tick.
And someone who can operate it and knows how to manage a major event. Because these things that we put on 24 weeks a year, they're no small party. They are mega events. For many territories that we visit, they are the biggest event, the biggest sporting event of the year that territory will host. So there's some technical requirements. There's a commercial arrangement, and if all the stars align, you might find yourself as the promoter of a Formula One Grand Prix.
And you talk about a race promoter. I think this is something that not everyone understands. So talk about how there's a relationship between a race promoter and Formula One, for
sure,
example.
Sure. So promoters are our partners in market. Everywhere we race, we have one of these fabulous groups of people called promoters, and they do all of the hard work for us. They sell the tickets, they build the grandstands, and they're our marketeers in each destination. So they're a really important part of the Formula One ecosystem. You may not always see them or know where they are, and it sometimes looks like it's F1, but actually there's an army of promoters in the background bringing all of our events to life.
And if I can use an example, because I'm British,
yes,
the British Grand Prix would be Silverstone.
That's
the promoter.
Right. Yes, exactly. You know Silverstone by its name, and behind them is a group called Silverstone Circuits, supported by the British Racing Drivers Club, the BRDC, and those two together form our promoter.
Yeah, and I think from the angle of being a US citizen here, Christian, on the other hand, you can take a Vegas, for instance, and the difference of how a track like that comes to be when obviously it's new, it's not necessarily a designated part of land that's specific to a track like Silverstone is. How does that become, quote-unquote, a promoter?
That's a whole other kettle of fish, Katie, and involves a few more people. So in Las Vegas, we're really lucky to be supported by a number of the key casinos, as well as Liberty Media, who took on the purchase of the land where the pit and paddock building is.
And we should just say at this point, Liberty Media is the ownership
the
group
owner
of Formula One.
Formula One, that's right. So they're important partners for us in the race, but we're also then supported by a number of stakeholders in Las Vegas, such as the county, Nevada State, and the City of Las Vegas Convention Authority, who are the champions for that city and take promotion rights all around the world for Las Vegas to tell the story of what that city can be in terms of a tourism destination. So that one is actually the effort of many to make one group that then promotes the event, which is an F1 company.
So Vegas is a bit of an exception to the rule, am
That's
I right,
right
in thinking? Because
yes.
Most of the time, correct me if I'm wrong, but say the promoters behind the Zandvoort race in the Netherlands, they will pay Formula One for the right to host the race and they will make their money back and hopefully they will hope to make a profit by things like selling tickets.
That's right, Christian. Roughly speaking, yes, promoters will sell the tickets to the grandstand seats or the general admission areas, and that's the way that they can have a big opportunity to earn revenue connected to the event.
And obviously there's so much legacy and history within Formula One. What is the longest standing promoter that you know, has built these relations over decades, years.
So we have a number of particular European promoters who have been with Formula One for a really long time. Examples are Silverstone and Monaco. Monza has so much heritage as well. They've been with us the entirety of the Formula One life. So our 75th anniversary is next year, and we've celebrated with them for a very long time.
Now, there's one race I'd love to talk to you about in particular, because, and the reason is, I'm being shamelessly biased here, it's my bucket list race. It's the race I always got up as an excited Formula One fan as a child, as a 10-year-old, with my legs crossed in front of the TV, because it was the first race of the season. It was getting up early. I was so excited.
Can I guess?
It's the Australian Grand Prix. It's the top of my bucket list. And I believe that signed a really long-term contract with F1. How does that work in terms of the length of how long they want to do it for?
Yeah. So we have great partners in Australia, in the Victorian government, and they are the reason that we have a really long-term deal in Melbourne until 2037.
2037?
Correct.
Wait,
so
hold on.
Albert Park.
How old
Albert
are we going to be at that point?
With us.
Christian, this means you and I have some time.
Katie.
You and I have some time to get to this Australian Grand Prix still. You know that. We can check that bucket list off.
Yeah, I don't want to work out how old I'll be, mate. I really don't.
And that doesn't mean you should wait. You should get out there.
Actively working on it. Actively working on it, trust me. So no, but that's fantastic. And I'm imagining that for a promoter, a long-term plan must be advantageous, right?
It is. It gives them an opportunity to make long-term plans, to decide what they'll invest in, to grow their team and have stability amongst their team. So yes, that's a really good platform for them.
Louise, I'm famously bad at recognising accents, but I think I might have just recognised it. You're Australian, I'm guessing.
Where are you from?
I'm from Brisbane.
You're from... If you were going to say you're from Melbourne, I'd be
Victorian,
like, I see what's happened. But of course not.
Yes.
Yeah, how much does that play into, you know, obviously we know commitment's great, and when people know that their partner's going to be there, how does that change the game to have a long-term contract like that? Does it amplify any of the to-dos around the racetrack? Does it continue to help grow and build? What do you see as big differences?
Yeah, well, we have a number of our races are promoted by government organizations because Formula One is this fabulous tourism play for them. So in the case of Hungary, for example, at the Hungaroring, they have right now just knocked over their building, and their pit building is now a construction site as they prepare for a complete renovation and overhaul. And that's someone who, again, we've got a long-term relationship with. So government then have the confidence that, yes, this is something I can invest in, something I can spend money on, because I've got legacy, I've got a number of years ahead of me, I'm building heritage in my country, I'm building that brand recognition as part of the Formula One calendar, and I've got the confidence to say I'm going to put in a state-of-the-art facility that's going to host these Grand Prix for many years to come.
Yeah, and I think also for the community in Australia, right? The people, Australians sitting there saying, I want to also invest. It's a great tool and resource for people to say, okay, we can now look ahead to X, Y, like Christian, I can do the quick math and look ahead to go to this many, right? And just really plan for it. I think that's a really special thing. Talking about where these F1 races are and how they get located there, Christian, you and I, top of the season, will take, you know, any race fan really, they, I can say this from my own experience, we take these schedules for granted, right? Like, here we, every time we know that they're going to come out, we know we can expect X, Y, and Z, and next thing you know, someone behind the scenes has worked their butt off for probably a couple of years trying to get this calendar released, and all of us just munch it up and are all of a sudden taking advantage of the fact that someone had spent really long, hard times on it. So Chris from Queensland, Australia, actually speaking of that, has also been curious, how are these circuits selected for the season? Because like all of us, we see them on the calendar and we can get excited about it, but there's such a bigger process that goes into this.
Definitely. The calendar process is not an easy one. But as to how races get there, well, we make arrangements for a number of years, usually. So anywhere from 3 to 5 or 10 years, depending on what the conversation is. So then that race and that promotion knows for that period of time, they will be on the calendar, assuming everything is well. They'll be on the calendar and they'll appear for a number of years. So that's why sometimes there's no surprises in an F1 calendar, and other times there is new races which you'll probably hear about in separate conversations, but that's why you'll see some consistency to the calendar, that you'll see the same names and places popping up over a number of years.
Let's carry on with our listener questions. Bear from California has a question about the mix of long-standing and new venues on the calendar. Bear says, as a pretty new F1 fan, I wonder why circuits like Monza and Spa are found on basically any F1 calendar, and why tracks like Las Vegas have come here for the first time. That must be a tricky balance between the legacy racers, as you mentioned at the start of the interview, that have got real history, and also wanting to bring in new venues to Formula One as it grows in popularity around the world.
That's right. So now we're at the point where we've got 24 races on our calendar, and we think that's the optimal number. We think there's great opportunity within that number, but we probably won't increase beyond that for the moment. So then it becomes a question of, where do we want to be? What serves us? What serves the teams? What serves our fans? And we look at our long-term relationships as well as a relationship that might be ending, and whether there's an opportunity to bring in something new. So you mentioned Las Vegas there, Christian, and that was obviously new in 2023. Looking ahead, we've got Madrid coming in 2026. So there is an iterative process over time to refine our calendar, and our promoters are always striving for more. They're striving to do better. They're striving to operate better events and to stay on the calendar. So there's this real battle and tension between some of the hosts about, will they have a future? Will they continue to appear on the calendar when the clock runs out on their contracts?
Yeah, and I assume from a very simple way, you can't divulge too much, but how is one of those selected? Like, is there one that says, oh, I want to be on there, and the other, like, how did we sit there and say, that's the one, we're going to go with that?
Yeah, well, if we take Madrid as an example, Katie, that is something that we think is a really unique opportunity in Europe. It's a destination city. So we are always looking for what is the best destination we can add to our calendar. Madrid's a really thriving city, and this project is in a unique location, connected very closely to the airport, connected by a major public transport system. We've got a unique promoter in the team at Efema, that they know how to run conferences and events to a really great standard. We believe that this is the next frontier of F1 races in Europe, because it's going to set a new benchmark for fan experience, fan travel, sustainability in a great destination. So actually, there's no one answer, but lots of different layers that go into our assessments.
I guess you're having to balance that as well with phenomenal racing circuits, because mm-hmm. obviously Formula One prides itself on being the pinnacle of world motor racing. So I guess a circuit like you might not say, describe, for example, Spa as a destination area. It's in the middle of the forest, but a wonderful racing circuit.
Correct.
Silverstone is probably a similar example. Is that a consideration that Formula
Absolutely.
One thinks of
it's,
as well?
It's really high on the list of, and especially working with new circuits, if someone's building something, how can we feed into that design process to help shape something that's going to generate excellent motorsport and close racing, as well as enhancing the destination element of the circuit?
And just before we move on from Madrid, there's a question on that actually from Cameron. Cameron's emailed us, F1explains@F1.com, to ask how F1 street circuits are chosen. Basically, how does F1 decide which city centres it wants to race in? And I wonder if you could, as well as answering Cameron's question, Louise, on how it's chosen, also say why street circuits are beneficial for F1.
Well, we always look to have a balance, not just about heritage and new, but also the format of the racing in terms of street circuit versus permanent. So at the moment, there are a number of now quite famous street circuits that are long-standing. Monaco and Singapore, for example. Singapore has now been around quite a while and is probably a really accepted part of the calendar. And there was a time when it was new and exciting, but now it's a really accepted part of our calendar. So much like the assessment that I mentioned before about a new race and all the different layers that go into it, street circuits present different challenges in that you might need to close roads. How willing is that city to close roads? You know, there are fabulous cities all around the world where we would love to be, but closing those roads is not practical. So somewhere like Baku, Singapore, Monaco, where we can close the roads and we have that city support, is actually a really unique opportunity to be amongst the city centre.
Cameron from Canada, another Cameron, emailed us to ask how that weather at different times of the year in different countries can actually affect the calendar. And you're talking about the city centres and some of the components there. Now you have to take into effect and into consideration some components like weather and how that shimmies out.
Yeah, that's right. So this is another factor that goes into calendar planning and adds to the complexity of that web of making the calendar. So we want to race in each of these destinations at times that are likely to give us nice blue sunny days like we've got here in Zandvoort this afternoon, and good conditions for racing. So you will have noticed a pattern emerge over the last few calendars where we have two races in the Middle East at the beginning and two at the end of the season. And that means we're not racing in the Middle East during the hottest part of the year. So that's one of the examples of how weather plays into our thinking. We also then have European sort of summer racing, and that means the conditions there are likely, not always, but likely to be better, and give you sunshine and great days for people to be outside and enjoying the motorsport spectacle.
We're actually going to move on to a similar topic of that, Louise, because we want to talk a little bit about sustainability, and we know that the calendar's change to reduce travel. You mentioned putting blocks of European races together there, blocks of Middle Eastern races, and the calendar has changed to reduce travel distances and make the sport more sustainable. Can you explain a little bit on how the calendar has changed in the past few years to run races in the same region one after another?
Yeah, certainly. There's two ways we work on sustainability. There's, as you've described, Christian, the order of the races and making that a logical flow. And there's also how we move. So any opportunities we have with the teams, of course, as the other major stakeholder in how we move, to move things by sea freight, for example. That's one way that we can reduce the impact of our travel. But yeah, on the scheduling side, an example is Japan had historically been towards the latter part of the year, and they have in recent times moved up to an April or early part of the season to twin with maybe it's in Australia or China. Once we're in that region, that makes a reduction in our travel to connect some of those near neighbours on the movement side.
Yeah, and I think the sustainability is one key component. And then you add the angle of travel for teams, the big overhauls of what that means for their sleeping and their scheduling, and actually you guys who are on the road each and every weekend as well, and your ability to survive and exist on the road so much. Some fans would then say, why don't we do three USA races and Canada race together? What's the reason for that?
Well, there's lots of factors that go into that. So as we touched on earlier, promoters in each of those cities are working really hard to sell their tickets. And would the economics be the same for them if there was four races in a row? I don't know. Maybe not. Maybe that's more challenging conditions for them.
So, you know, if all the US races are back to back to back, would it be harder to sell US
maybe.
Tickets?
Yeah, maybe. Of course. The other thing that we will factor into our thinking is our TV scheduling. And what would it mean for our European audiences if all the races for a block of maybe 6 or 8 weeks was on a particular time zone? Of course, we have that the other way, but it's just something to think about. What would that mean? And the other thing that people don't realise in grouping races by geography is you might then lose the opportunity to use sea freight. Because of how closely together they're scheduled, you have to move quickly, and to move quickly, you use air freight. So it's almost a bit of a fallacy that, Formula One could fix its sustainability challenges if it grouped everything together, because then we would be more reliant on air freight. So actually, sometimes staggering our flow is very deliberate and intentional to link different amounts of sea freight, and it's, unfortunately, Katie, just not so simple as whacking them all together.
Well, another example, Louise, as well, I guess, say with something like Miami, what a wonderful... I personally love the Miami Grand Prix. I think it's a wonderful thing that Formula One arrives in Miami at an iconic sports stadium like the Hard Rock Stadium. But if that got moved to the other end of the year when other US races are, you're into NFL season,
correct,
and you lose the ability to use that fantastic facility any earlier, and you've got tennis offered.
So, that's right. Yeah,
and everything's a consideration, isn't it?
Exactly. It's there's a lot that goes into these things. So the Miami Dolphins, our wonderful partners in Miami, also are involved in the Miami Open. And
we can't kick them out the stadium. They'd be really cross with us, the Miami Dolphins.
They might be.
You don't want to annoy them. You don't want to annoy them. They're big lads to annoy, aren't they?
Louise, I just have this image of you and your team sitting there in a, with a big whiteboard or chalkboard in the back. And it's like, if this, then that. Okay, no, that doesn't work. And if this, then that. Okay, like, it's just like the maze. And do you guys write it out and kind of paint the picture before sending it all in emails and spreadsheets? Like, do you guys have that powwow?
There is a lot of that, Katie. A lot of brainstorming and a lot of strategy goes into producing the calendar. We obviously have some software tools that can help us do that in a more sophisticated way. For example, automatically calculating the distances between cities. It can flag for us temperature ranges, some of those more practical things that it will layer in as a base case for us, and will flag for us if we've pushed something too far or too hard, and we can then change our assumptions about the particular order or placement of a race.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio-exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free Pocket Pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio-exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free Pocket Pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
Let's talk about sprint weekends. For those brand new to F1, sprint weekends are where we have a shorter race on a Saturday before the full-length Grand Prix on a Sunday. There's been a couple of tweaks to the sprint calendar over the years. For example, Silverstone's held one in the past, not so this year. Next year, Belgium hosts one, Austria doesn't. Various tweaks and changes. How do your team, Louise, and yourself decide where to hold a sprint race?
Well, that one really does focus on racing. What's going to give us exciting racing action? And, you know, one of the territories you didn't mention there, actually, Christian, is Brazil. And that has been a standout performer, sprint after sprint. Really exciting action there. And it does feature on the next, on the 2025 sprint calendar. So you'll expect more action from that one.
Louise, let's look at a couple of other topics to do with the calendar. How far in advance do you work? For example, are you already working as we sit here in 2024? Are you already looking at 2026? We know the 2025 calendar's already been announced. Even beyond that, how far advanced are you looking?
Yeah, we're looking really closely at our arrangements for 2026, for sure. We've got a rough idea of what that's going to be and who's going to be there, so watch this space. But a lot of work to do between now and then. We aspire to announce the calendars as early as we can to give promoters opportunity to plan their ticket sales campaigns, to book their logistics, their contractors, equally for the teams to plan their accommodation and flights and logistics, that with greater lead time, people can have more certainty and make their plans.
Louise, there was some recent conversation on one of our podcasts, Beyond the Grid, and there is some information dropped that there's potential there could be some races in Thailand, Indonesia, or South Korea. Can you give us a scoop or what latest and greatest in that regard?
Yeah, there's lots of fabulous destinations, Katie, that we're talking to about new race prospects. You might have referenced a couple there. But it's no small thing to add a new race to the calendar. It really is an aligning of the stars if that can all come together. We do have interest from a lot of unique destinations that understand the property that is F1 and what that can do for that host city or that host nation to put them on the map amongst, at the moment, 24 very glamorous places to have the economic impact in their community and really associate them with our unique brand.
Yeah, Katie's talking about Greg Maffei, who is the president of F1's parent company, Liberty Media. We mentioned them earlier in the interview. He said on Beyond the Grid that as well as F1 looking to host a race in somewhere in Africa, and as Katie mentioned, Thailand, Indonesia, South Korea, he also mentioned that some races might well rotate in future. How could that work?
Yeah, that's something that we're definitely exploring. The great thing for us is if we were to use two races to essentially fill one of our 24 slots on the calendar by virtue of having a year on and a year off, and then in the year off it alternates with who takes that slot, is we get to maintain two of our fabulous promoter relationships and two of those host nations. So that means we can grow the number of places that we visit, introduce novelty to the calendar, and give more opportunities to people to be involved.
One of the fantastic things that kept Formula One running probably better than any other major sport in the world during the pandemic was some fantastic motor racing facilities came to our aid, and we were able to go and race in places we haven't raced for a while. But a lot of fans like me really enjoyed the calendar being a little bit different, and I suppose that could be another advantage. That's like, oh, we haven't come to this track for a couple of years, this is something exciting. I'm imagining there's also a factor there to consider with rotating races.
Yeah, that's right, it could introduce an element of novelty for sure.
Sure.
There were some comments made by Formula One's boss Stefano Domenicali recently about racing in Africa. It's also something Lewis Hamilton's spoken about. Once again, I just wonder if there's anything that you could add to us there, Louise. Is that an area of the world? It's an area of the world that at the moment Formula One isn't visiting. Is there a desire within the sport to go there? We know, obviously, we've heard Stefano talk about it.
Yeah, we're exploring a number of new race destinations all around the world. As you mentioned, an obvious piece that is missing from our global calendar is a presence in Africa. And if we can find a partner who is the right partner to do that with in Africa in a sustainable and long-term way, we'd be really enthusiastic about that. We want to make sure that it's not just a flash in the pan and that it's done in the right way and has the possibility of a long-standing relationship.
Something I often see discussed amongst Formula One fans on social media, for example, we know Formula One has got such passionate fans. They're incredible, like no other sport in the world. I see a lot of discussion about the calendar. How much do you look at what's important to fans, and how conscious is F1 to sort of open its eyes and ears to its fans? Because they're so passionate about it. They talk about it so much. And I have seen fans sort of say, well, I wonder how much they're thinking of us when they're deciding what tracks to keep on the calendar, where to go next. How much does sort of the fan experience and the fan opinion matter to F1?
It's definitely one of those layers that goes into the assessment process. And if it's a fan favourite, that probably means it's ticking a lot of boxes. It probably means there's great racing, which was something we were looking at anyway. It probably means that the fans have a nice time and an easy journey to get there. It probably means the promoter is performing to a really high standard. So in some ways, it's actually sort of circular to have that.
Of course. That
fan feedback is probably fueled by a number of the other elements that we're also really closely focused on.
And just finally, Louise, before we let you go, you mentioned earlier in the interview those promoters. This is only my second season travelling with Formula One, and it just amazes me the detail, the effort, the number of people, the amount of stuff it takes to put on one of these world-class events. It staggers me. It absolutely staggers me. The people who put on these races, they must work so hard.
They absolutely do, Christian, and it's really great that you asked that, because I think promoters are sometimes the unsung heroes of our sport. Without them, we don't have much to play for. So yes, promoters are our movie stages, our photo shoot backdrops, they're our play parks, they're our sporting arena. They bring everything to life for us. And yes, they're a really key part of the overall ecosystem. It takes a year of planning to put on the next one. So just as soon as the circus leaves town, you can bet that that promoter is reflecting on what went well, what they'd like to change for next year, how they can grow their fan base and make their event more successful year after year.
You were talking about it earlier in a conversation with Katie. I just wanted to go back to it because you mentioned Hungary. What a fantastic example, because I saw pictures on Twitter that as soon as F1 left Hungary this year, within days, the place looked like it was practically rubble as they are preparing to make things bigger and better for next year. And we were talking about advanced planning. Fantastic, isn't it? That immediately, straight away, it's like, right, next year, how can we make it better?
Yes. I mean, Hungary is the extreme example that someone's knocked down their pit and paddock building. But
they don't do that every year.
They don't do that every year, certainly not. And it's going to take them two events to have completed that reconstruction. So they're certainly on a big journey over the next 2 years to complete that project.
Louise, first and foremost, I'm a Formula One fan. I've been watching this sport since I was a little boy, as I say, getting up excited at 4 o'clock in the morning UK time to watch the Australian Grand Prix. I've always found it fascinating on how the circuit calendars are put together and where we travel. It's fascinating. So I've really enjoyed this chat, Louise, and I'm sure you have too, Katie. It's such interesting stuff, this, isn't it? It's the sort of thing that you just don't think about. The calendar appears, and there it is, we have a calendar, but it's fascinating to hear what goes into it, isn't it?
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's like I said, I think we sometimes take it for granted, these calendars that come out each and every year, but there is so much that goes on behind the scenes, behind the black curtain to bring it all together. And again, I think it'd be a lot of fun to be a fly on the wall in these discussion rooms, these brainstorm rooms of how it all makes sense, because there's just so many different components and elements to it all. Thank you so much, Louise. This is such great insight for both Christian and I and our F1 Explains crew.
Yeah, Louise, thanks for coming on F1 Explains. We really appreciate it.
You're welcome, guys. Thanks for the time.
Katie, loved having Louise on the podcast. I found it fascinating, like talking about how hard it is to plan the calendar. Obviously, I thought of weather before, but I'd never thought of the fact that sometimes it can be more sustainable to keep geographically close races apart so sea freight can be used to transport things. That, like, I'd never thought of. The level of thought and detail that goes into making this calendar is amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, I go back to the thought, Christian, that we, not that we all do this, but I think that there is this, like, a taking for granted of a calendar each and every year, right? Like, we know there's going to be a schedule. We understand that it's going to be launched. We know that, you know, we could expect certain races and others not, or, you know, we get the foundation of it. But the time, the effort, the conversation, the planning, the thought, the intentionality that comes into making a calendar is just, I'm blown away by it. Actually, I would love to be a fly on the wall in those boardrooms where, like, they write on, you know, a marker on the board or a chalkboard and then they cross it off and then, like, they draw a line to another location. I feel like it's one big puzzle.
Oh, and we mentioned sustainability when we were talking about sea freight and stuff. There's something new F1 is doing at European races. It's working with a company called Aggreko on a central power system for the paddock. So teams won't have to bring their own generators anymore. They'll just plug their stuff into the new central system. And that system is low carbon. When they trialed it in Austria, Katie, in 2023, it reduced carbon emissions by 90%.
Holy cow.
I would suggest that trial went rather well, don't you?
That's a checkbox there, I suppose. So every European race in 2025, all of the garages, the team motorhomes in the paddock, the pit wall, that timing room, all the TV broadcast equipment will also be powered by this low carbon system. And because the teams don't have to bring their own generators anymore, it also reduces the carbon emissions of getting their stuff to the track. It's all part of that big plan that F1's been putting together to reach net zero by 2030.
So let's get on to some listener messages then. F1 Explained to F1.com is the place to send us your questions, and we'll find the best person in the paddock to answer them. Or just send us some general thoughts on what you think about our podcast, The F1 World. Leah in France has a question related to the F1 calendar. She asks, why are the motorhome buildings the teams use in the paddock at European races not used on other continents? Katie Osborne, you have an answer.
So Leah, these are temporary but very impressive buildings which F1 teams put up in the paddocks. At racetracks outside of Europe, though, there are permanent buildings in the paddock which the teams are given for the weekend, so they don't really need to bring their own motorhomes. It means they don't have to transport those motorhomes to another continent, which also, like we were just talking about, reduces those carbon emissions.
Right, we've got a few shout-outs. Hello to Matt in LA, Haftis in Iceland, Moira in Austin, Liam, who is an Irishman living in Australia. I bet that's an interesting accent on Liam. Rebecca from Sydney and Richard in Milton Keynes in the UK. Richard from Milton Keynes has created an IMDb page for the podcast, and it has a list of all our episodes and says things like starring producer Chris as himself.
Deserving.
Liam.
Deserving to wonderful. Be on that page, I suppose. Also, hello to Matt in Dallas, Texas, and Pat from Grand Rapids, Minnesota, who, Pat, I just got to let you know, I thought at first we really thought it was Grand Rapids, Michigan. I was just there last week. And I Googled Grand Rapids, Minnesota to see about what this Grand Rapids, Minnesota was. And it turns out Grand Rapids, Minnesota looks like a very nice place, not Grand Rapids, Michigan, in fact, where I was last week. And both Pat and Matt emailed to say that they're excited about our live shows at the U.S. Grand Prix in Austin in October, which, Christian, I don't know about you, producer Chris, I don't know about you, but I am very excited also about that live show at COTA. So you can still get tickets to those races. And it's going to be very, very exciting.
We'll talk about the details of the live show in Austin in a minute. That's all very well. But more importantly, Grand Rapids, does it have like water rapids like you get at theme parks? Please say it does.
I can't answer that because my Google search didn't go that deep. But
okay, Pat, I would like to know, please, F1explains@F1.com. Pat, do you have like water rapids like we have at like Alton Towers in the UK or like Universal Islands of Adventure in the US or something like that? I really would like to know.
Good shout
anyway,
out.
Yes, Formula One. We are going to be at the US Grand Prix in Austin for a second year in a row. We're very excited. I adored Austin last year. It was my first experience.
It was such a joy.
Oh, I can't wait to come back. We're going to be on the amphitheatre stage on the Saturday evening after qualifying for an F1 Explains live show. If you have a ticket for the weekend, you can come and watch us at no extra cost. Please let us know if you're going to be there. We might be able to make you part of the show. F1explains@F1.com, amphitheatre stage, US Grand Prix, Saturday evening after qualifying, F1 Explains live show. We're very excited.
Yeah, yes, I can feel that passion, Christian, from you. And I want to add to the...
I love Austin.
I want to add to it, what was really exciting about our rookie show last year at COTA was how people stayed after the show and we got to have a conversation with people and interact with the community, our F1 Explains community. So that was...
Come and see us after the show.
Yeah, we'll have a chat.
And yeah, definitely. We'll definitely do that. We've got some very interesting episodes coming up as well on a driver's pre-race routine, on F1 Academy, on Downforce, on performance engineers, loads more. So please make sure you press follow or like or subscribe on your podcast feed.
We have new episodes every Friday. And of course, make sure you're listening to F1's other official podcasts, F1 Beyond the Grid, for in-depth interviews with some of the biggest names in the sport. Charles Leclerc and Yuki Tsunoda are on recent episodes. And check out F1 Nation as well. The latest episode has reaction to Adrian Newey's move to Aston Martin from Tom Clarkson and Pedro De La Rossi. You can find both F1 Nation and F1 Beyond the Grid right here on your podcast app. But Katie, from us for this week, that's it.
That's it. After all that said and done, that's it.
That's it. Thank you so much for listening. We're back next week. Bye for now.
Goodbye.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio-exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hosts. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethosts.com/terms.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hosts. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethosts.com/terms.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio-exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hosts. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethosts.com/terms.